Fellman, and I am joined here. Hopefully, I can pronounce your name correctly. Jeff Sekarek?
Jeff Sekarek, yes.
Jeff Sekarek, okay. And I'm going to say that you are a fitness expert. And I think it'd be better left if I let you tell my viewers or my listeners who you are and what you do.
Okay, thanks, Ryan. First off, I really enjoy your Twitter page. For
Thank
what
you.
It's worth, I think you're the best email writer out there.
I appreciate that a lot.
I've been doing this for a long time, so I read a hell of a lot of emails, and so there you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My background is, right now I'm 51 years old, but ever since I was a kid, I was very much into sports, played baseball, played basketball, played all the way through high school, a little bit in college. And I've always been into fitness and nutrition. And then about 30 years ago, by the way, I was raised in the Midwest, so I was a meat eater, ate just pretty much your standard Western diet, what everybody else around me ate. Hamburgers, fried rice was my favorite. Pretty much like all of us as youngsters, we can shovel in whatever we want, and it doesn't seem to have much of an impact. Now, then about 30 years ago, I read the book Fit for Life by Harvey Diamond, and it basically goes over the idea that human beings are designed primarily as fruit eaters. And so from that day forward, it's kind of interesting. Now we've got video, audio, CD, all these different avenues of learning things. But that back then, it was one good book that changed the way that I thought about diet. So 30 years ago, I gave up meat. Gave up everything, became a 100% plant eater, and I haven't had any meat since then. You could say I'm stubborn, because there were times along the way, in that 30 years, the first 10 years, I kind of looked at it as, well, I'm eating this good, healthy diet, so I can get away with things that other people can't. And I've got kind of an addictive personality. I became a drug addict. I worked in Alaska, did a lot of hardcore manual labor. And you develop aches and pains when you're working 18 hours a day and you're twisting your body. You got heavy shit all over the place swinging around you. And so I developed some aches and pains. And on fishing boats, which I worked on, there's a kind of a culture out there, kind of like a tough guy, hardcore culture, and you find yourself sometimes out of necessity falling into that. So I became pretty much addicted to alcohol and drugs, which I've talked about quite a bit on Twitter. I talk about it in my books. And yeah, I was a hardcore, I would say, alcohol and drug addict for quite some time, although I never let it, you kind of call it a functional addict. I never let it get in the way of my work, so to speak, but it was always there, dragging me down. And although I was eating what some would call a very good diet, I noticed that as I continued with the other bad habits, that a lot of the food I was eating you could categorize as vegan junk food. These are not carbs. You're talking about chips, you know, fried rice. Now I don't even consider those carbohydrates. I consider carbohydrates beans, potatoes, fruits, vegetables.
Right.
But back then, you know, your brain, when you're on alcohol and you're on drugs, you're not thinking clearly, particularly when you're working 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that all caught up with me. And then one night I was listening to the Art Bell show, and I was listening to, there was a woman on there, Lorraine Day. She's an MD. You can go to her site, drday.com. She was given 2 weeks to live with a massive cancer tumor on her chest. And she chose not to go with chemotherapy, but adopted a 100% fruit and vegetable diet and got rid of the cancer. That story always stayed with me. And from that day forward, I gave up all the junk food. Pretty much have since then have eaten only fruits and vegetables, and I'm in perfect health. And that was the one way, that on top of hardcore calisthenics workouts, that got me away, gave me the ability to quit the lifestyle that I was leading. So those two things are what I talk about in my book. I've got a couple books on Amazon, but those are the two things that I usually hone in on when I'm working with somebody. That is, I'm not saying everybody just go cold turkey, although that worked for me because I've got an addictive personality. And I'm not saying you can't have a little meat here and there and be healthy either. I think where what helped me is going all in, being 100% fruits and vegetables and zero junk food. There are guys that I know that can have a bag of chips now and then. That I know guys that can have a few drugs or a couple of drinks. That's not me. I'm not like a one beer type of guy. So if I have one, bad things happen the rest of the night. So it's easier for me to just do nothing in terms of bad habits. And that's what I did. So, yeah, that's basically what my life is focused on now is 100% fruit and vegetable diet and hardcore calisthenic workouts every morning.
So how many years now has it been where you've been just on this all clean elimination diet?
Yeah, that's been almost 20 years now that I haven't had any of the junk food or any of the stuff. So, yes, I've been vegan for 30 years, but some of that time was junk food vegan. That's not healthy.
Yeah, I understand. It's it's interesting. You're making me think of Michaela Peterson, which I'm sure you're familiar with her story, right?
Michaela Peterson, no. Who's that? So
that's Jordan Peterson's daughter. And she had all sorts of health issues. I forget exactly what she had, but she had some sort of a food allergy they couldn't quite figure out. And she went on an all elimination diet too. And I think she only eats steak. She may eat like butter and veggies or something, but she basically cut out all processed food. And that's the parallel I'm seeing with you. And, you know, I find it interesting because a lot of people get hung up on the whole vegan meat issue, but, and I'm not all in on this, but I've been working towards going like paleo. So I'm working towards getting rid of all my processed food now.
Right.
You know, I had a few chips the other day, and I do once in a while, but it's the progress for me. So I knock the next month. So like I probably had ice cream once in the last like 6 months. I don't really eat soda. I do drink beer, but I'm not. That's probably like my worst thing. I drink a few beers, but I'm not the guy that's going to sit and drink like a 12 pack in a weekend or anything.
Well, let me tell you something. Here's what I do like. And here I've got friends on Twitter that are meat eaters. I mean, I've got friends that are paleo. I've got friends. Matter of fact, I've got more friends that are paleo than I do that are vegan. And part of that is I really respect, first of all, we have the workouts in common. A lot of us, we both like the hardcore workouts.
Yeah.
We like workouts that produce, that release human growth hormone. So we're right on the same page there.
Yep.
And also we're on the same page in realizing that the mainstream media is full of shit when they recommend them with their dietary recommendations. We both realize that whole foods are where it's at, not supplements, not junk food, not drugs. We are both into intermittent fasting. I could go on and on.
Now, yeah, we share a lot in common.
Sure. And I'm also on board with I don't fit into, nor do I care to fit into any specific category, particularly the idea of vegan. I don't even use the word vegan anymore because you're dragging into that a lot of baggage. Not that I don't care about animals, but I got into this and I'm glad that I'm not eating animals. Great. But I got into this for health and fitness reasons. And so that is not my primary focus. Also, when you start talking a lot of these vegans, their brains cannot think clearly about one subject at a time. In other words, if you're a vegan, you must be under the impression that cows gas is changing the earth for the worse, which, in my opinion, is one of the stupider ideas that they've got humans to believe. Climate change, one of the biggest scams. It's just a scam. They came up with this shit 30 or 70 years ago so that they could tax you for breathing. So when you say the word vegan, you get dragged into a lot of this nonsense that I want no part of.
Yeah.
That's why I say I've got a lot in common, sometimes more so than with people on the paleo end. And where we part ways is where the primary source of calories is coming from, protein or carbs. That's where we part ways. I tend to believe, and I put a lot of stock in the work of Colin Campbell, who has pretty well proven that you can turn cancer on and off by raising animal protein intake or lowering animal protein intake. Regardless of where you fall in terms of the diet, I think we've got more in common than not.
I agree. So, on the Colin Campbell thing, is that like strictly meat or is there like a specific type of meat? Cause I know like hot dogs in general are like known to cause cancer.
Well, Colin Campbell is a Cornell biochemistry professor. And what they did is he originally went over to the Philippines because they're thinking these poor Philippine kids are not getting enough protein.
Yeah.
And come to find out when they got there, they found out the ones that were getting the most protein are the ones that were coming down with liver cancer. So they ran on years and years of different studies on this. And you can find a lot of these on ncbi.info. They collect all the peer-reviewed scientific studies from all over the world. Not vegan doctors, not any one particular slant, just all peer-reviewed scientific studies. And what they found is, first of all, this guy didn't believe this. He grew up a dairy farmer, this doctor. So he's thinking, nah, this can't be right. More protein, and this is the stuff of life.
Right.
But what he found is human beings, when they're babies, they're during their greatest growth spurt area of their life, they need the most protein, and that's in mother's milk, and which is about 5 or 6% protein. And that turns out to be just about the ideal level throughout the rest of your life. If you go above 5%, you start getting towards 12, 15, 20%, you can turn cancer on like clockwork. And this is what he found out. Now, you can't do it with plant protein. You'd use animal protein, and you can increase cancer, and then you can turn it off by getting rid of, by dropping back down to 5%.
Okay.
So I tend to put a lot of stuff. And then the thing is, you can back this up with cultures. I'm just going to throw one out there. The Papua New Guinea Highlanders, they eat 94% carbohydrate. It's from sweet potatoes. 3% protein, 3% fat. These people are extremely well muscled.
Right.
Because sweet potatoes, natural carbs, not oil.
And
so the thing is, with sweet potatoes, for example, one of the lies by the meat industry was previously that you don't hear it so much anymore because it's been outed that plant proteins are incomplete. That's just very simply not true. You can go to My Food Data or Chronometer. You can see lentils, beans, sweet potatoes have all the amino acids. It's a matter of the amounts. They have less amino acids than meat does for a reason. Because if you add in, you start inching up too much protein, you start growing everything. Just like you start adding in too much sugar. You know how they grow cancer cells? They grow them in sugar. So you start inching up on the sugar and you start inching up on the protein. Now you're giving you become a host for cancer. And that's why you see that if you plot it on a graph, the countries that consume the most meat and the most refined sugars, those are the cultures with the degenerative disease. And this is where I agree with many of the paleo advocates on most of what we agree on.
Yeah, so, the refined sugar is like, it's an epidemic. I mean, it's a massive plight. I was actually discussing this with Cynthia Thurlow in my last podcast. And it's challenging because it's not just about discipline, because that is a big part. Because sugar's addicting, it's delicious, it's easy to want more, and it's
right.
But it's also like hidden. You know, there's things like bread that have sugar in it that most people would never even expect.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean spaghetti sauce. It's crazy how much this system that we build. I know that word gets thrown out a lot. I don't necessarily mean like conspiracy. It's just that there's a lot of money to be made in propagating this conspiracy of pushing cheap, refined products on people, and sugar's addicting. It makes you fat. It makes you a lifetime consumer. You know, it's not much different than like cigarettes were back in the 50s and 60s, where the marketing people have taken complete control and they've addicted people since, you know, at an early age, and it's a hard thing to break out of. I'm still kind of struggling with it.
You think it's not a conspiracy in your head. The more appropriate question is, what's not a conspiracy? Everything's a right. fucking conspiracy. And you can bet your life that the sugar industry and the meat industry, they are spending overnight, every night, trying to figure out how to get you to consume more of their product and less fruits, vegetables, and the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I totally agree.
Yeah.
But I also totally agree that, and when we talk meat, I think we'd both agree, we're not talking about processed meat, hot dogs, hamburgers, McDonald's. The paleo guys that I follow, they're into, many of them, killing their own game, clean as possible, organic, off the farm, bought locally. So that's another thing I'm in agreement with. There's a big difference between a guy, let's say, that's feeding his whole family off of one cow every 6 months.
Yeah.
And it's raised on the farm versus the other guy who's eating, you know, at McDonald's three times a day. Two totally ends of the spectrum. So to lump those two people, those types together, is the same as lumping a junk food vegan together with a guy that eats just fruits, vegetables, beans, and nuts like me.
Exactly. No, I'm with you on that. I've managed to cut fast food out of my diet. It's hard to believe, but once you've stopped eating it for a while, I mean, I don't miss it. It reminds me of that scene in Fight Club when he blows up his apartment and he's like in that house. He goes, after a month, I didn't even miss TV. I think of that all the time. Like, after going a couple months and not eating fast food, like, I drive by and like, it's not appetizing. I can be starving and I'm like, I'll wait. I'll find something else to eat later.
No, the thing is, when you're eating a clean diet, every bite has so much nutrition in it that you don't crave the bad stuff. On the other hand, if you're loading up on junk food, you're getting calories, 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 but you're always hungry. And that described me growing up. I mean, I was always eating bread, chips, whatever, just whatever was around, but I was always hungry. Remember when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Just any time there was food, I was eating. And so that's what happens when you get these junk food addictions, and you notice, you know, it takes a couple weeks if you're eating a no processed food, no junk food diet. But I'm sure you found, like me, that your cravings go by the wayside the longer you stick with it.
Yeah.
And the less you cheat, the better.
Yeah, my parents, they did me a lot of favors growing up. But the one thing they didn't do for me was they did not give me a healthy diet. So I was used to eating a lot of fast food, a lot of restaurants, and then I went from playing basketball to playing football, so I was putting on a lot of weight, and I got used to eating like 5,000 calorie days.
And sure.
It was a tough habit to break. But yeah, as I started eating more natural food, I found it's a lot easier to go without eating. It's in fact, I kind of stumbled upon the whole intermittent fasting thing because I was living alone for a while, so if I was going to eat, I had to cook it. And I was busy, and I was not really that big on cooking, so I skipped meals here and there, and I didn't even know that was intermittent fasting. I just did it. But you're right. You're eating that natural food. It fills you up much more so than, say, Diet Cola and French fries. And it's easy to do 16, 18 hours a day. That's another thing we agree on. The intermittent fasting, I think that's huge. I don't know about you, but I find myself so much more alert and focused. I get a lot of my best writing done when I'm like starving.
No, I agree. It's something that I didn't latch on to until maybe about 4 or 5 years ago when I read The Warrior Diet. Ori Hofmeckler. I can't remember. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name, but there's a book, The Warrior Diet. I think the guy is a paleo advocate. And I think that was the first book that I read about the intermittent fasting. And I picked up on that only because I'm into calisthenics and I like Herschel Walker. So I got into, you know, I dug a little bit deeper into the Herschel Walker workout. Then I found out that he eats once a day. And then, so I got it. I learned about that kind of by watching Herschel Walker videos, then read The Warrior Diet. And I agree. Once, if you can just start by skipping breakfast, there's a lot of power in that.
Yeah.
Because you eat lunch, let's say at about noon, then let's say you eat an early dinner at 4 or 5, you got all your eating done in a 4 to 6 hour period, then you got 18 to 20 hours fasting. So that's what I do now. I love it.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. It's pretty simple. It sounds complicated until you realize that you're sleeping for half that time. So, I mean, it's really not that challenging. And then another place we agree, I love doing the morning workouts. Even if it's not going to be a real hard workout, I start almost every single day doing something. And part of that's staying in shape. Part of it's because it's a good time for me to work out. But the other reason is it gets me way more focused. I'm much more productive on the days where I'm busting my ass in the morning.
Sure.
Yeah,
I do the same thing. I mean, every morning that's something I've done for at least 20 years, probably closer to 25. Every morning now I do 2,000 to 3,000 reps of calisthenics, which sounds like a lot, but you get into a role when you're doing high rep calisthenics and you see really quickly that there's a big difference between doing hardcore calisthenics sessions without stopping, where you're drenched in sweat and gasping for air versus, let's say, wandering machines at the gym. So the first thing I like to do in the morning is alternate sets of squats, crunches, push-ups, pull-ups, jumping jacks, and just turn on some music or do it outdoors and just go for an hour without stopping. And you find if you're in reasonably good shape, by the time you hit 45 minutes, you're at about 2,000 reps. And you keep going and the reps start adding up and your muscles start burning and you are, in my opinion, there's no better way to release human growth hormone, which is linked to all the stuff we want that we talk about. Thicker skin, greater sex drive, just deeper sleep, all the benefits, all the biomarkers, I guess you'd say, of youth happen when you do these hardcore workouts where you're, and it helps, by the way, if you do it in a fasted state. So you were talking about the fasting. If you fast, let's say you stop eating and drinking, nothing, at 5 p.m. Now you wake up at 5 after 12 hours of fasting. The sun's coming up at 5:30. You're in an ideal state to produce human growth hormone. Then what happens is you do, let's say, a set of squats, 50 or 60 squats, and you jump up and down to failure where you can feel your thighs burning. That burning is lactic acid. That sends a message to your pituitary to release human growth hormone. So anytime you feel that or you're gasping for air, you're releasing human growth hormone and you're getting all of these benefits. And you feel that throughout the rest of the day. So totally, work out it when the sun's coming up. And also you get it done before excuses get in the way and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's my issue. I harp on that a lot on Twitter too, because I'm pretty disciplined, but at the same time, like, I'm a much different person in the morning than I am in the afternoon. I think that's true for most people.
Sure.
The calisthenics thing is different than weights. I did weights for most of my life, and then last year I started training for a Spartan race, and I just downloaded some Spartan workout I found online, and it was all calisthenics. I was kind of surprised by that. I thought it'd be more weight room stuff. But yeah, same stuff you were doing. It was like jumping jacks, calf raises, push-ups, tricep dips, pull-ups, a lot of pull-ups, burpees. And it's a different kind of workout. It can kick your ass even if you are in shape, if you're not used to it.
You can bet on it. You can bet on it. If you doubt that, anybody that's new to it, I tell them set the smartphone aside and just do as many squats as you can. Okay, then right after that, jump, get down on the ground, do as many push-ups as you can. Then jump up and do as many squats as you can. Now do that for 20 minutes without stopping. If you only did that and did it for 21 days, you'd probably be in better shape than 99 out of 10 guys that go to the gym and wander from machine to machine in these very comfortable positions, resting and talking between. So, yeah, that's, in my opinion, that's kind of a waste of time. Now, that said, I, like, again, I'm like an all or nothing person. So I do the diet 100%. I do calisthenics for 100%. But then I do know guys, and you can see, like, many of these CrossFit guys, they mix the two, the weights with the cardio. But I think the key is then not stopping.
I agree.
Mix the two. Go to failure many times within the workout. Get to a point where you're sprinting, gasping for air. That is signaling your body, hey, we need to improve to accommodate this new demand.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's what I try to do with every workout.
It works. I mean, my diet was pretty good last year, but it was far from perfect. But that exercise routine, I just did it consistently. And I send it out to all my new email subscribers too, by the way. And it's more or less a variation of what Spartan does, but it works. Mm-hmm. And the great thing is it's easily scalable. So maybe you're not all in. Maybe you're one of those guys that just, you know, you just want to lose a few pounds before beach season or whatever. It's nothing says you can't just do 50 reps something or 25 reps, then pause for 10 seconds if you need to, or 30, whatever level you're at, and then do the next set. You know, when I first went through this set, one thing that really threw me was Russian twists. So YouTube that one if you haven't heard of those, but
for sure.
70 of them, and I had never done them before in my life. I never heard of them, and I got around like 30-35, and like I just started cramping up, and I'm like, that's it. But you know, now I can do them no problem, and it's
no, you're progress. Yeah, your calisthenics is, it's kind of like I'm not a good swimmer. You can think you're in good shape, you get into that pool, it's a different deal. You're working out in a completely different way. That's kind of like if you're, you know, growing up, I did weights and sports and stuff. You start doing this calisthenics, when you get up to like 100 squats in a row, you're like, it's a different type of demand on your body. And then especially when you're not stopping between sets, and there's really nothing like it, to my way of thinking. And I've tried pretty much, you know, static contraction training. I've tried every possible type of training. And nothing, in my opinion, beats, especially 5:30 in the morning, the sun's coming up. And like you said, you can do it to your own pace. It's very adaptable. You can do it anywhere. You can do it in your hotel room. Nobody's watching. And grow from there.
Yeah, I think that's a big one. I think a lot of people are afraid to go to the gym because they're out of shape. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I understand that. I've never been that guy that was like 100 pounds overweight, but I've been 20 pounds overweight, and I don't want to go to the gym. So, you know, the couple of times in my life where I've gotten to that stage, that's what I did. I stayed at home, did the calisthenics workout, I shaved off 5 or 10 pounds, then I'm like, all right, now I feel comfortable to go to the gym. It's a nice way to kind of get yourself comfortable before you put yourself in front of people, if that's a problem. And I think it is for a lot of people.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and the calisthenics offers you gives you the freedom to, like you said, start at your own pace, grow from there. And I think a lot of the people that I've worked with are amazed at how quickly you move up, how quickly your body adapts. Now, I mean, I've been doing it for so long that you do hit plateaus, and that's when you mix things up and you maybe bring in other exercises. But I mean, just with a few, it's amazing. Even after all these years, I'm sometimes amazed that just with a few exercises, squats, push-ups, pull-ups, how much you can get done, how you can just absolutely transform a person if they're eating a reasonably good diet. I mean, I can take a woman that hasn't done much for her whole life, and if she starts doing this 21 days later with a good diet, I am seeing major, major changes.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
No, like last year was I ran a 5K. It was the first time I ever did like a race of any length like that at all. So I was not a runner. Like everybody likes to say, like, oh, I'm not a runner. I'm like, yeah, yeah, me too. And now I am. You know, you start eating a little better. You start doing the calisthenics. You get there. And, you know, I did a half marathon earlier this year. I'm doing another Spartan race later this year. Garrett Daly and I are probably going to run a 50K one of these days. I'm not sure when, but I could probably struggle my way through it, but I'd like to run most of it. So I'm not quite there yet, but it doesn't take much. And people get hung up on, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to bust my ass for an hour and a half. I'm going to do a huge workout. And maybe they do, but then they give up on it because they don't want to do it again. It's just that little effort. And if you can do it consistently, day in, day out, you do a little bit every single day, that's when you really start to see progress.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's, depending on who you believe, these psychologists, psychiatrists, they say 21 days is about the amount of time for you to develop this habit where you don't have to wake up, for example, and search for the motivation. If you can get yourself to do it for 21 days, then some type of magic happens. And yeah, I believe in that. I mean, I've seen it many times where I've worked with people, you know, gone over to their house, gone through their cupboards, tossed out all the junk food. And it's a struggle to get them to do sometimes this stuff for 21 days. But what happens is after a few weeks, they start seeing results.
Yeah.
And that it makes you want to, precisely, that makes you want to, makes them want to do more. And then what happens is, like now, of course, hopefully you get to a point where I'm at now, and we're probably where you're at, is it's just a lifestyle. It's like brushing my teeth. I wake up, I brush my teeth, I run out to the exercise. I'm here in Cambodia. I run over to the exercise park over here, and I just do my thing. Yeah. So it doesn't require any motivation if you can get yourself to do it for a few weeks.
Well, and it all works well together. Once you get that diet lined up, you're more energetic and you're more likely to want to work out. Then you start working out more. Then you start losing pounds. Then everything just gets easier. And I mean, every little pound that comes off just makes your life so much better. It's like a positive feedback loop.
Yeah, I think you hit on something right there. That it's a synergistic thing. Yeah. Like if you take somebody that's on a McDonald's diet, and they're doing a workout, that's going to be, now if they're in their teens, of course, like we remember when we were in our teens, I could eat damn near anything. I'm lucky to be alive, probably. It's amazing with the human body, the abuse in terms of junk food, drugs, and alcohol that I dumped into this thing for the first 25 years of my life. Sometimes, I mean, I am very thankful that I'm still here considering some of the situations that I put myself in. But yeah, you, it's a synergistic thing. You take somebody on a McDonald's diet that's our age and you give them a hardcore workout and they might drop dead of a heart attack 2 weeks in. On the other side, you could be eating the cleanest 100% plant diet in the world. And if you're not doing any exercise, it's been proven that you're going to die younger. So you put both of them together and then you start bringing in the less TV, bringing in the getting rid of the drugs, bringing in things like cleaning out your house of all the crap that doesn't have to do with the person that you want to become. Now you've got three things going in your favor. You're far less likely to backslide into these habits that you had before. And I know this because I was a hardcore drug addict for a long time. And it took doing everything synergistically for me to get off of that. Yeah. That's part of the reason I ended up in Cambodia is I had to get out. I was in Las Vegas when I left America. And there, the drugs are everywhere. The people I knew were everywhere. I had to dump the toxic friends. I had to dump pretty much the whole damn country and get away from it, at least temporarily. Now, I've been back since then. But what I learned from all of that is if you can do everything, it sounds crazy to do. You know, some people might say, oh, that cold turkey, that's extreme. You shouldn't do that. Well, think of how extreme your life is. Or I should say, you know, when I'm talking about myself, my life was extreme the other direction, you know, in terms of junk food and just a whole slew of other bad habits. So for me, it took a hardcore, just a decision. I'm going to clean the whole house out. I'm going to do this every morning. I'm going to not eat any of the junk food. And when you do all of that at the same time, I found even with most of the people I train, you're seeing results quicker, so they're less likely to backslide.
Yeah, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you got to get rid of the distraction. It's just when you have all that stuff around you, you're setting yourself up for failure. I don't care how disciplined you are. At some point, you're just going to be hungry. Yeah. and all that food's so easy. Aside from, like, fruits, like, all the processed food is just so much easier to prepare, too, you know.
Sure. Yeah, and you got to remember that, like, your body, depending on who you believe, some of these scientists say, well, you know, you've got an entire new body every 18 months. In other words, every cell in your skeleton, in your organs, everything dies in less than 2 years and all of your cells are new. So if that's true, now some guys say it takes longer, but let's just say it's a couple of years. It's going to take you a couple of years to totally get rid of your addictions, because your drugs, your junk food, a lot of that, the memory of that is stored in the cells of your body. That's why I remember when I got off of cocaine, it'd be just maybe a year later, I'd be driving down the street and something would trigger me. Yeah. And I would just see, and those feelings would come up in my body. I would think of a pipe for smoking cocaine out of, and I would immediately have to go to the bathroom, which is one of the symptoms of when you're on drugs and you start getting real excited and you're thinking about it, you've got to go to the bathroom. That would happen to me a year in. Wow. After I had been off of the drug.
Yeah.
Now at this point, I could look at the stuff. It doesn't mean anything because my entire body has been restructured. All those cells are dead. I put in so many brutal workouts, so much time, so much love and energy into swinging the other direction that the memory of that addiction is no longer there. But you just have to, you got to cut yourself a little bit of slack, I think.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, and if you backslide, don't beat yourself up. Like I had backsliding. I had a couple of nights where I was in the bathroom and swore, it was in such a state of paranoia that I swore there was somebody on the other side of that door. And so when you're in that level of addiction, which many people are, maybe not in terms of drugs, but then if you believe the statistics, half of America is on, I forget how many drugs, but
yeah,
a fifth of Americans are on like at least one, and then 70% are on, I forget the stats, but it's big. So everybody's got some type of addiction, and if you can cut yourself some slack and then stick with a good program for 3 weeks, get yourself started and then stick to it and not beat yourself up and understand that it's going to take a little while, I think you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I think statistically people are most likely going to slide back. You know, it's not talked about often, and it seems like a failure. But it's part of the road to recovery involves a few pit stops along the way. You know, I've seen people struggle with it. I never got into the drug thing, but I did smoke cigarettes, and I did that for a few years. And I was able to quit that one cold turkey, but you know, there was a day or sort of here and there where I kind of went back to it a few times, but not much. And I just figured that was part of the course. I had a few months where I was drinking too much too, but nothing extreme. That's it's tough breaking those habits. And then a lot of people have addictions that I think they don't take seriously because they look at people that are on drugs. They go, well, that's a real addiction, but they're addicted to maybe their smartphone, maybe playing video games, maybe watching TV. I mean, like,
sure,
fast food, all sorts of these things are not healthy. And if it's not really making your life better, do you really want to keep doing this stuff, or are you actually in control or not?
No, that's where I really enjoy your, sometimes I'm amazed at the relationships and the people I've met on Twitter.
Yeah,
how much value that there is there. Like, and particularly with people that I maybe don't agree on every single little thing with. I mean, I don't agree with anybody on everything.
I hope not.
I try to, you know, you try to take in the information that's of value and then see the other person's point of view. And I'm just amazed at the value that your Twitter page offers. I mean, not even your books. Just I follow your feed, and I've got almost 24,000 followers on Twitter. I only follow 60-some people, and your tweet feed is one of them that I always look at. So anybody out there and your email list, for what it's, as I said in the beginning here, for what it's worth, if it's not for me, you're one of the best email writers out there.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
The email list thing was kind of funny. I kind of just started it one day because everyone else was doing it, and I realized it was a good way to sell because people actually read your emails, especially if you write good ones. Mm-hmm. And I've been studying them for a while. I was a good writer growing up, but I've been reading Alexander Juan Antonio Cortez. I've been reading Tej Dosa, Nate Schmidt, your emails, several emails. I've been reading quite a bit. And you start picking up on things, and the best advice if you ever want to write your own emails, though, is just to get started. And, you know, the first, I don't know, 20, 30, 50 or so that I wrote weren't great, but they got the job done and then helped me learn what works. And the great thing about email is you get all these stats like open rates and click rates, and you're getting that instant feedback on what's good and what's being ignored and why. And I love email, and not just because it makes money, and it probably is the most efficient way to make money online. But I love email because, one, I can be a little bit more free with what I say, so I don't have to worry about getting suspended. And two, there's not really any constraints. I mean, you don't want to go too long, but you can start writing, and if it's short and sweet, that's okay. If you've got a lot to say, you can go off for a while. It's a nice, easy format to say something with a little bit more nuance to it. You know, I'm honored you like my Twitter feed, but you'd be amazed at how many tweets I write, and then I have to erase them or edit them because they're too long.
Well, no. The thing is, I think you hit on something there too, is the freedom that we've got now. I mean, first of all, your path to manliness is, in my opinion, a much needed, considering the state of things. When you live in a world that's run by mass murdering, demonically possessed, probably not even human psychopaths, who are pushing a, for want of a better word, satanic agenda that sexualizes children, that turns men into effeminate, non-Charlton Heston-like, just pieces of garbage, where the youth of the culture look at maybe Justin Bieber as a man. That is not a man. Charlton Heston is a man, okay?
Yeah.
I think we've lost track in our society about even what a man is. We've fallen so far in terms of, and it doesn't help shit, people having to work slave jobs to pay a debt that they never even agreed to the Federal Reserve. And you know, you could go on forever about the conditions that modern man is forced to face.
Yeah.
That in the mainstream media portrays as a man is only going to make things 10 times worse. And that's why importance in stock in the work that you're doing, whatever you call it, on the tribe of people that follow you. You could call it a tribe. I don't fall into any particular tribe, and I think you've got a lot more freedom and leeway on your site than a lot of other guys. But the work is never important. And they're trying to normalize pedophilia, men being women, and just dressing kids up in girls' attire. And you know, we've reached a point where when I was a kid, or like, let's say when our parents were young, can you imagine what they would think of this culture that we live in now?
I mean, it's unreal. I'm not that old. I'm only 31. But even I feel like it's come so far so fast. I remember when homosexual relationships were like not tolerated. I don't really have a problem with them any way or the other. It's how society was not that long ago. To put a date on it, Obama was only pro gay marriage in the second term, and same thing with Hillary. You know, that was kind of the time when the masses started to switch, since then.
Okay, hold on. You were breaking up there for a second. Repeat that last little bit you said.
Well, basically, I just said that, you know, Obama and Hillary were against gay marriage until, you know, his second term. You know, that's kind of when the tonal shift of society started to shift on that. And, you know, I have nothing against gay marriage or anything like that. But since then, it's just been this remarkably fast slippery slide where we've gone from that to, you know, transsexuals and or transgenders and these kids that they're trying to push ideals on that. Maybe some of these kids feel a certain way. To me, it looks like the parents are trying to push ideals that they want their kids to have.
And the thing is, it's gone beyond that now. It's gone beyond that to the point where, for example, in Australia, they're taking 6-year-old and 7-year-olds and giving them sex changes. This is a crime against humanity. We've gone from a society basically that even in the 50s, I mean, nobody's saying it was perfect, but how far we've fallen in just a few decades is shocking. We've gone from a somewhat of a freedom loving culture, although the country hasn't been free since 1913.
Yeah, ironic.
Federal Reserve was instituted, but we've gone from a culture that was somewhat cohesive on their idea of what a man was and the place of marriage and how children should be treated to a case where we're sexualizing 5- and 6-year-olds and changing the sex of kids and putting boys into skirts. And the hell of it is, for anybody that doesn't think it's a demonic agenda, you better take another look at that, because it's happening all over the world at the same time. And I know, because I've been all over the world. They're doing the same exact thing to kids all over the world.
Yeah.
Usually you can't get these countries to agree on it and damn near anything at the same time. So if you can get all of these countries that I've been to agree upon sexualizing children at the same time, that's already telling you that there is a hidden hand, overarching system putting this agenda into place.
Yeah.
It's similar to, I mean, you can take any case. You can take 9/11 just for one example. That immediately after 9/11, you've got 100 countries that institute their version of the Patriot Act. Unless you're a complete idiot, you realize that is telling you that there is an overarching agenda to take advantage of that situation and use it for all it's worth. And it was already prepared, because you can't get these countries to agree on shit, much less 100 of them on the same damn thing.
Well, whenever you see cross-party support in politics, I'm always very nervous. Oh, my God.
Good Lord. Yeah. And they're doing that now. I was just looking at, what is the guy's YouTube channel? It escapes me right now, but the movie came out a few years back, Minority Report.
Oh,
and of course they're putting these movies out as nothing more than propaganda to sell you debt, war, drugs, and slavery. Or any seemingly different thing they're selling you in movies or TV is merely an offshoot of one of those.
Exactly.
And so you have the Minority Report movie, and now they're looking into this. It's called TAPS. It's some type of preventative measures where they're going to be able to go in, look at your emails, look at your phone calls, look at your Twitter feed, look at your Facebook feed, and determine whether or not you are a threat to society. And from there, shut down your account, monitor this, monitor that. They've already got 80 different legislators that are ready to pass this thing. So when you say, you know, take advantage of Twitter and email while we have, the operative words there are while we have it.
Because, well,
it sounds crazy when you say things like this, but it's not, because things have already started to slide. You know, for so long, we're like, well, we'll always have our freedom of speech and the press. But, you know, whether you agree with him or not, they clearly took out Alex Jones. And they didn't do so with legitimate reason. They just did it because they didn't like him. And enough people went along with it that there really wasn't any big pushback. And we're going to pay for that in the next few years, because it's going to happen to somebody else. And each time it's going to go to somebody that's a little bit less extreme. And eventually
it's happening already. Follow John Rappaport. John Rappaport's been doing it for 30 years. He's had his blog. He came up with No More Fake News. Go to nomorefakenews.com. John Rappaport. Follow him on Twitter. He had his blog going for 30 years and just started talking about the fact that vaccines have formaldehyde and aborted human fetal tissue. You can get that off the CDC's website. They admit it. So your vaccines are nothing more than a blood sacrifice to children. And they're a way to get you to comply with government so that you don't own your body. So he started talking about that, and bang, WordPress, he no longer has a blog. So they're getting their hands into everything. And these new laws that they're passing, the one that I just hinted at, what they're saying is they're coming out of the closet. Now we're just gonna go to this country and bomb them and steal their oil. We're just going to shut you down, and we don't care what you have to say about it in terms of censorship. I mean, look, YouTube is becoming like MySpace. It's getting to the point where anybody that says anything on Facebook or YouTube that doesn't have to do specifically with the agenda at hand, which is the just your standard mainstream media pro-war, pro-sexualization of children, pro-degradation of man, anybody that's against that is getting banned or flagged or whatever they call it on YouTube. YouTube, look at like John Rappaport, these several people that have been banned or flagged by mainstream media, Facebook, YouTube. You know, it's getting to a point where this is no free speech is no longer accepted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it all did start at 9/11. It goes back to that Patriot Act, and at the time, it was just people were so caught off guard; they didn't know what to think about it.
Are you still there?
I am. Yeah, so it all goes back to 9/11 when people.
It looks like we got a bit of a weak connection here now.
Yeah, I don't know. I moved closer to the internet. I thought it might help. I'm not sure which one of us it is, but it's alarming. And I think a lot of people are kind of waking up to it now. They're just not sure what to do about it. But there's been so much consolidation of power in Silicon Valley that at this point, they can kind of do what they want with it. And it's not a whole lot to do to stop it.
Well, the only thing is you've got, you know, like a lot of guys on YouTube that have channels that are being flagged, they're going over to BitChute or these other mediums. And that's the only thing I can think of. Like now, of course, I'm still on Twitter, but who knows how much longer I'll be on Twitter before I get flagged or blocked or whatever. So I went over to Gab. I'm on Gab. And it's just going to boil down to using other mediums if you get kicked off of the main ones, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think that's where email really shines. That's one of the best places where not impossible to get kicked off, but it's much harder, much less likely. And if you do get kicked off from there, your most loyal supporters and followers can at least communicate with you to go wherever you do end up going.
I agree, yes.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know where to go from here. The best that I've been able to do is just try to communicate with people. And what concerns me is a lot of younger people are growing up in a very different world, and I just want them to somewhat understand what it was like.
No,
the way things are now is not normal.
No, it's far from normal, and I think that's why your channel, that's why your Twitter page is important. That's why your work is important. And
likewise,
I think, you know, it can get depressing, and when people ask, well, what do you do about it? Well, you do. I tell people, just do what I've done about it. I went out built a small cabin. I'm pretty much self-sufficient. I cut my expenses down. I threw out the junk food. These are all things that the evil psychopaths that rule the world don't want you doing. They don't want you growing a garden. They don't want you keeping fit. They want you in the hospital. They want you broke or dead. So if you just do the opposite of all that and you just refuse to comply wherever you can, and heck, you know, I built my house out here for like $5,000. You can build a house, and I've got the videos on guys who have done it. Just go to YouTube and search solar cabin. He's a guy, solar cabin, built his small solar cabin for $5,000, including the land. Rob Greenfield, another guy in Florida, did it for $1,500. Just start to think along these lines of getting off drugs, getting fitter than you were in high school, maybe building a small cabin, stocking food and firearms. If we get 10% of us, let's say you had 10% of the country, 32 some million people in America, that just said, you know what, we've got our cabins, we're self-sufficient in our food. The corrupt IRS here wants to start another totally absurd war. You know what? We just don't think we're going to pay you. If you've got 30 plus million people that just choose to opt out, you know, the IRS has only got a couple thousand armed agents, and you know half of them are cowards. They'll just quit. You know what? There's not a damn thing they can do about it.
Yeah.
It happened. We saw it in the Great Depression when they tried to outlaw liquor. What happened was you had a certain percentage, 10 or 20% of the population that just said, you know what, we just think we're going to do this anyway. And if you send your agents out here, we're going to tar and feather them and maybe shoot back.
Yeah,
if we get 10% of the world to think along these lines, there's not a freaking thing they can do about it. So that's what we need to be focused on. Not, and it's okay to focus on the evil and
still with me, Jeff? Yep. I just missed that last thing you said there.
Those are the... Okay, I think we're losing the... Are we still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. You just cut out there a little bit when you said it's okay still to something. But no, I agree with you. I think people have a lot more power than they think they do. I think there's a lot of systems at play here that are going against our best interest, and that's what a lot of us are trying to do. We're trying to kind of enlighten people, make them wake up from the zombie life that so many people live, where they just, you know, they get up groggy, they hit the snooze button a few times, they drudge to work that they don't really even work that hard at. Then they come home, just eat their TV dinner and watch TV. And it's just, it's not how we're meant to live. And a lot of it's because people are trapping themselves with things that they don't really need. I live a pretty good life, but at the same time, it's below my means. I've got extra money on the side. I don't need to spend every dollar I make.
If we get a good portion of the youth thinking along those lines of self-sufficiency and all the things we've been talking about, it doesn't take this huge number of people to change the direction of the world. I mean, you think about when the Revolutionary War started, you know, most of the country in America just wanted to say, well, We can use this money that England is giving us that's like a Federal Reserve note where we're paying interest to a bunch of psychopaths. And then you had about 10 or 15% of Americans that said, no, we're going to print our own money and so that we don't have to pay interest on it. And if they come here, we're going to kill them. Well, it only took 10 or 15% to change the course of human history. So like you said, you've got more power than you think. And you start to see that if you kind of live the life that we're talking about, and other people start to notice, and then you become the person that people ask it for advice, and it kind of ripples out from there. So hopefully, the more people that we get to think along these lines, we inch closer to that 10% mark, Eventually, for example, in the U.S., you get 32 million people that refuse to take the microchip for free Wi-Fi, which is coming. You could bet on it. There's nothing they can do about it. There's nothing a government's going to do with 32 million people that refuse to accept their slave state.
Yeah, and, you know, we've never had more power in our speech before either with social media and email and websites. I mean, at this point, there's no excuse not to be able to try and reach people. And it's easy to say that, my voice isn't being heard. Well, start writing those emails. Write them out a couple times a week. Start a website and start writing on there. Start writing in a journal if you're not comfortable with it or not. But, you know, over time, these things build, and most people just give up too early.
Yeah. Also, you can never underestimate the fact that, depending on which epigeneticist you believe, there's a whole realm of life beyond the five senses that you're a part of. So every decision you make, every bite of food you take, every email you write, every Twitter post that you make, you are affecting the collective consciousness of all of mankind.
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of think in those terms when you're starting in the beginning. And it also helps if you kind of, you know, you write down your purpose and you have a direction that you're going in that you want to share with people. Then it's not about, like, my Twitter feed is not about getting more followers. My Twitter feed, I don't fall into any one category. And so I don't subscribe to any one particular tribe. If you just focus in on the things that you are most passionate about and the things that you can prove have value, what you find is that things start to come together naturally if you just don't quit and if you're consistent with it.
Yeah, I like that. And that's one thing I try to harp on people. And you've mentioned this a couple of times in this call, but just the idea of thinking for yourself, thinking critically. And people are kind of hung up on this idea that you're supposed to believe like every single thing that the people you like say, but it's just unrealistic. You can find somebody that shares all of your ideals and there'll still be something that they do that you're not going to like or you're going to disagree with. And that's kind of the beauty of humanity, really, in that we're allowed to have our differences like that. And just don't be upset when you see somebody think something that you just can't fathom, you can't accept. I mean, unless it's something like truly important. And I think we've lost sight in that. But focus on celebrating these like differences that we do have. And it's okay to have differences and just be your own person. You don't need to fall perfectly in with the tribe, even if you do like most of what somebody is saying.
Yeah, you've got to be open-minded enough.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a delicate balance because you've got to stick to your principles, but by the same token, if I get some information tomorrow, I'm not so, you know, horrifically attached to them that if somebody comes to me with something that a different take on it that proves that I was wrong about this, then okay, I was wrong. As you get older and as your ability to distinguish between truth and lie gets better, that'll happen less and less. But you still, you've always, like you said, I follow people on a few different ends of the spectrum coming at truth from a couple different perspectives, some from the political end, some from the food end, some from the anti-transgender end, you might say. And they all come at it with a little bit of a different take. And they've all got a little bit of a different take on maybe diet and exercise and some other things. But that's how you get better, is you have these set of ideals that you're working on to improve yourself and maybe your clients. And then your mind is constantly open and comparing and contrasting to other, let's say, studies and different things that come in. I mean, I've got people that send me different studies all day long from NCBI that prove this or prove that. And so you know, you compare and contrast this stuff against what you know, and then what you has worked in your own body and has worked in your clients' bodies over a long period of time, and then that's how you get better. So I agree. You've got to always keep an open mind for as long as you go. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, no, we've hit on a lot of really interesting things. I knew you and I would get along with a lot of things. I know we've got the difference of the vegan thing, but everyone's got some sort of a difference. And ever since, I don't know, maybe that went on before Trump, but ever since this last election, everyone's just gotten so much more sensitive to ideas and ideologies that they don't agree with. And
no, I know. You can really see it. You can really see it that you've got, if you spend any time doing a little bit of research online, it doesn't take long to see that we know who they are. You've got a handful of psychopaths that finance both political parties. Nobody's arguing that. We know where the money for Trump came from. It's coming from your big bank lobbyists. You can prove that just by looking at who's in his cabinet full of advisors. You talk about draining the swamp. He's got a swamp full of psychopaths around him. So, they want human beings divided along the lines that they've got them divided along for a reason. If you had to ask me, I think that if you go on the Democratic side and you just start talking to people, I'm seeing some very disturbing trends there, like the sexualization of children.
And that's been talked about.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's been hinted at that it was coming. It was always the fear when the LGBTQ movement started. And I have no problem with any of those people. I mean, I said this in the Zuby podcast I was on earlier today, but let your freak flag fly, but you got to leave the kids out of it. Yeah, they're just not emotionally, physically, mentally ready to have, you know, life-changing decisions acted on them. So I don't. It's frightening how it's moved on to this so fast. But you're right. This child pedophilia movement. What do they call it? Age something or other. They are pushing an agenda, and it's just.
Yeah, and these are
a good word.
Yeah, for sure. And these are the types of issues that they're using to. I mean, of course, they're important issues. They're using them. They'll use whatever they can to keep the masses divided and keep them from talking about the things that are the most important. For example. Printing your own money. I mean, nobody seems to ask, for example, the entire world is trillions in debt, trillions and trillions of dollars in debt. You got a handful of countries that are not trillions in debt to a handful of psychotic bank owners. And so is this the point where we've gotten in modern man where we're just going to accept that this handful of people that just print paper and we pay interest on it, we're just going to let them just run roughshod over us? Because here we are arguing about whether or not bathrooms should be transgender. There's always an agenda, not to say that that stuff isn't important, but the most important things, you'll find that they act as one. The Democrats and the Republicans, they work across the aisle. So this is where, when you look at the, and I tried to tell people this at the last election, they're all like, Trump, yeah! Nothing has changed. Is the Federal Reserve still there stealing your money? Is the IRS there still stealing your money? Are we still bombing other countries? Do we still have the biggest prison population on earth? Is Obamacare still there? They tweaked it a little bit, but they didn't freaking take it out. Has there been any wall built? Do we still have troops in 75% of the world pointing guns at people, stealing their resources? Nothing's changed. Not when it comes to the stuff that matters.
Yeah. No, it's not a whole lot that can be done about much of that. And you know, I spent quite a few years kind of obsessed over it and upset about it and angry. And the one thing I've been able to do to kind of distance myself from it, just to accept it, is, well, one, sometimes just to write about it. I found by getting some of that anger and frustration out, it makes me feel better. A lot of that writing goes in a bonfire. but beyond that, you know, I don't really watch the news anymore. I focus on myself. I focus on my business, and you know, I work on my own little community, my own little circle. And thanks to the internet, my own little community's kind of grown. It's gotten big.
Yeah, and that's what we need to do. That's what we need to do is we get a good percentage of us thinking along these lines to build self-sufficiency. And if we get enough of us doing it, there's nothing they can do about it. Because we have to remember, we're the majority, this tiny little group of psychopaths that write commands and that the police and militaries carry out. They're a tiny little group of people. Yeah. If we get just, you know, 5 to 10% of us to push back and be completely self-sufficient and strong in our ideals, there's nothing they can do about it. So your way of, that's what I like about your page and your way of talking self-sufficiency and all of that, it ripples out from there, and that's all you can do. And when you go to sleep at night, you can rest easy knowing that you were on the side of righteousness, and you've done everything that you can do to impact the world around you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so I think we're getting towards probably over an hour here, Ryan.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good time to go ahead and wrap it up. We hit a lot of really heavy topics on this one. I expected it mostly just be on fitness and diet, but this is a good talk.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun doing it, and next time, hopefully, we'll have a better connection. And if you ever want to talk again, just send me a message on Twitter.
Absolutely, I'd love to. Why don't you go ahead and let people know where they can find you. Thanks, Jeff. We'll see you.
Okay, thanks. See you.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Pat Simonis podcast, be sure to write us a review. That way we can reach more men that are lost and need direction in their life. And if you feel that you are lost and you need direction in your life, or you simply are looking for brotherhood, a sense of belonging, a place where you can be a man, a traditional man, and be around other men who are motivated and working to build something themselves, check out patreon.com/pathtomanliness to gain access to the private Discord server where you can connect with other highly motivated individuals.